Welcome to the Last Podcast on the Left interview series. I'm Marcus, and I'm sitting here with Happy Anderson, a.k.a. Jerry Brudos on Mindhunter. How you doing today, man?
I'm good, man. Real good. Thanks for talking to me.
Hell yeah. Thank you for coming on the show, man. We really appreciate it. So, were you aware of Jerry Brudos before getting the role of Jerry Brudos on Mindhunter?
Oh, absolutely not. I'd never heard that name before. And then when I got the role and started doing the research, it was very bizarre, man. I had already read the script and stuff and knew he was kind of out there. And then when I started reading about the real guy, you know, there's that book Lust Killer about him. Mm-hmm. And then just a simple Google search will just, just pull up all sorts of crazy stuff. And it's just like, oh, my God. I couldn't believe he wasn't more famous.
Yeah. He's one of the, that's the amazing thing about it, is he's one of the earliest ones. Like, he's one of those that could have very easily been, like, just as big of a deal as Ted Bundy or Jeffrey Dahmer. I think it was just people were just too squeamish back then to really hear the details of Jerry Brudos.
Oh, there's some far-out details, too, man. Well, the show just touches upon it, you know, like... There's that story about when he was 15 or 16 or something, he raped that girl in a barn and then left and changed his clothes and came back and said, I'm so sorry, my evil twin did it. I'm going to find him.
Yeah, and he even did the heavy breathing routine as well. Like,
I chased
him away. Yeah. It's pretty intense. Like, after you read up on Jerry Brudos, like, did you have any apprehensions of playing a character that awful?
Sort of. I mean, the way it was written, I was very excited to just, like, kind of take it on. And like, you know, so rarely in a television show do you get, like, that kind of writing, you know? I mean, it like, really cradles an actor in a sense. But, I definitely had some apprehension because I knew this was a Fincher thing and a lot of people would probably see it. And so it would get me more attention than some of the other stuff I've done. So I was like, oh boy, this will be interesting, man.
I guess particularly, I think what was your last scene in Mindhunter was taking the shoe over to the table. Having your way with it.
That was actually reshot too, and the first version was really graphic.
Really? What was the first version?
It was just I was sitting much closer to the guys, and you just saw me beat off, basically.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man.
I was super glad we changed that.
So, like, what is it? What is it, I guess, because Mindhunter's become, like, kind of a bit of a, like, cultural phenomenon now. It's actually, the funny thing is, it's kind of been great for Last Podcast because it's kind of showed that people want to see and hear the bloody details. Like, they really want to be a part of that, and they're not really that squeamish about it. Like, what's it kind of like to be a part of this whole thing?
Well, it's really exciting. I mean... you know, it's very odd because this is, besides the Nick, really, this is the first time I'm getting, like, random attention on the street, you know? Mm-hmm. And so you never know what you're going to get. Some people are excited and want to do a selfie. Some people, like, look at you like you're fucking disgusting or something, you know? But I'm just really grateful so many people like it.
Yeah.
You know? I think it's really well done. I think Fincher's a genius, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm just glad it's being received so well. Because when I first read it, I was like, so much talking. Who's going to want to watch this? But it's like, it's so good.
Yeah, man. There's so much. Like, what is it like working with Fincher?
It's amazing. I mean, you know, every day is like a 15-hour day. And each scene took a week to shoot almost.
Wow.
So I was there almost a month and in Pittsburgh. And, you know, the most... concise way I can put it is every day when I'd finish, I didn't feel like I was doing a TV show. I felt like I was rehearsing a play for 15 hours.
Huh.
Like, it was that thorough, that collaborative, that, like, intricate. It was really exciting. It was, you'd come away totally exhausted and totally, like, charged up at the same time.
It really does. I guess the thing does have very much of a play type of feel to it. Like, it doesn't... where it doesn't necessarily play like a regular cop show.
Oh, not at all. Yeah. It's very theatrical. All those scenes in the jail and stuff and the scenes with Kemper, it was grand in scope. So, and it's just a conversation. It's just a simple conversation, and it's so exciting.
So how did you get into that role? Because one of the things that I love about your performance is that you really capture how infuriating these people can be. How infuriating a serial killer can be, you know, by just like the playing with people, you know, and loving it. Like, how did you get into the role?
Well, it's the easiest thing to do, the most straightforward thing to do is try to relate it to your own life. And obviously when you're playing a serial killer and a necrophiliac, there is no direct lineage to anything. So I just thought about it as like intense desire and intense, like, you know, even for an actor, like in the beginning of your career, you're always trying to prove yourself. And this guy, he constantly wants to be the cock of the walk. He constantly wants to be the most interesting guy in the room. And it was sort of tapping into that and tapping into, like, you know, just this idea of childhood trauma, because that feeds so much of who he was and what he did. I mean, obviously, a lot of people experience trauma and don't turn out like that.
Obviously.
But if you're already like have a pretty severe chemical imbalance to begin with, and then your mother treats you the way she treated him, and like sexual identity and all this stuff, it's going to come out sideways.
Yeah.
One way or the other. Whether it's that bad is, thank God, a very rare thing.
Extremely rare. Thank Christ it's so rare. We talk about that on the show a lot, the serial killer soup. What is it? what is it? What are the ingredients that need to be put together to create someone like Jerry Brudos? Do you know what he did like later on in his career? Like, not in his career, but in his time as a prisoner?
What specifically are you referring to?
Specifically, the little career that he found afterwards. Because I thought that was really interesting in the show, where, you know, he kind of takes the tape recorder and then fixes the tape recorder for him. But yeah, later on, he installed the entire cable TV system in the prison.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's just so crazy.
Yeah. He's got that. Well, he was an electrician, you know.
Right.
But I thought that really spoke to the writers of the show as well, that really like took that little detail of like, this guy's good with stuff, but like makes it into such a weird little human moment.
Yeah, man, it was really the person that wrote the two episodes I was in was actually a playwright first.
Oh, okay, that makes a hell of a lot of sense.
Yeah, so the character development was like really rich and really like you just couldn't wait to sink your teeth into it.
Yeah. So how did you make him, I mean, speaking of like a human moment, like how did you make a monster human?
Just like I said, things that I could relate to, like we all have many traumas in our childhood that shape who we are, right? Or very like big events that seem huge when you're a kid. And the other thing I kind of tapped into was like that fucking like awkwardness in junior high when you can't really talk to a girl, you know? And at the time, I mean, it's so funny when you get older, but at the time, it's kind of traumatizing.
Yeah.
You know, you come up to a girl and you stare at your feet and you sweat and stutter and you don't know, and it feels horrible. So I kind of like steered myself in those directions. And the tricky thing, though, was making him a little bit likable.
Yeah.
So you could see the charm that would, you know, that women would drop their guard around him.
Now, that was extremely difficult because, he was an infuriating person, but at the same time, yeah, he had to be at least the tiniest bit charming. Just a tiny, tiny little bit.
Just enough so people, because even Groff's character, Holden, lets his guard down a little bit with him. And it's not all manipulative.
Yeah.
You know, that part where he talks about his mom caught him masturbating, like, I got the sense in the script that it just popped into his head and he was relating to Jerry and just let it out.
Yeah. I mean, that's also like a great part of that guy's character as well. Like the whole series, like it's been pretty like, so welcome to true crime.
Yeah.
Like welcome to the world of true crime. Like, you know, did you, because it is becoming like true crime is becoming this weird, I guess it's always been popular in America, but it's become kind of this nice little subgenre that's becoming like a big deal. Like it's coming like out into like mainstream society a hell of a lot more. Like,
yeah.
how How are you enjoying your time in the world of, I guess, this new world of true crime?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, having had absolutely no experience with it before, I think it's fascinating. And it's fascinating how other people are so fascinated with it. Mm-hmm. You know, because I was never that interested in that before, this true crime stuff. And then the other thing, one of the many things I loved about the script is it's not graphic. The violence is all psychological.
Yeah, except for the pictures that they show. That's pretty
interesting. Well, yeah, the crime photos and the very first scene in the first episode, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously. But yeah, it is definitely psychological, which is like, it's, I don't know, people just like hearing about this shit. It's weird. Like, well, I mean, for us, we didn't think there were so many people who liked hearing about this shit. We always...
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The popularity of this show and how fast Mindhunter became so popular, it's like, whoa. People, like, have a fascination with our dark side, man.
Mm-hmm. So are you getting more into true crime now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the documentaries I've been watching and the shit I've been reading, it's like, ooh. And I have to, like, kind of, like, take a break from it sometimes because... You can become engrossed in that stuff. I just watched in 2 days, I watched The Keepers. Do you know that Netflix documentary?
Yeah. Yeah, I know The Keepers, man.
To watch all of the episodes in 2 days, I was kind of catatonic at the end.
Yeah. I mean, that's how a lot of these things are, man. It really does wear on you after. If you don't take breaks, then it can definitely wear on you.
Yeah. It's great. And, like, living... we shot Mindhunter last year, but, like... You know, there's no time to do it. Like, there was no time to explore Pittsburgh. Every day was, like, just from morning till night, just you're living these words and these people. And it was like, whew, I got home from it. And I was, like, not only exhausted, but, like, kind of sad. Like, people are sad, man.
Yeah, man. So what are you working on now?
Right now I'm finishing an arc on The Blacklist on NBC. And then in January... I go to San Francisco for a new movie called Bird Box with Sandra Bullock, which will also be a Netflix thing. And I'm in the big $100 million Netflix movie Bright that comes out in December.
Oh, nice. I've seen the ads for that.
Yeah. That's very much a niche thing too. You know, like when I read Mindhunter, I was like, this is either going to be an amazing success or no one's going to watch it. I feel the same way about Bright because it's, you know, you're mixing fantasy with reality, and it's, again, it's a great, great script, but, you know, and the effects and makeup are stunning, but it'll be interesting to see how it's received.
What's it about?
The most concise way to describe it is it's basically Training Day meets Lord of the Rings.
Oh, shit, that sounds awesome.
You know, it's that gritty cop drama, like... Will Smith is the human, and Joel Edgerton plays his partner, who's an orc, and he's the first orcish police officer, because in this world, like, orcs are, like, the second-class citizens, and no one trusts them, no one likes them, and then I play an FBI agent, I'm human, thank God, because I didn't have to put in any crazy makeup, but Edgar Ramirez plays my FBI partner, and he's an elf.
Excellent.
And elves are, like, the white-collar aristocratic members of that society.
So it sounds like they're just finally taking, like, really taking actual modern fantasy novels and turning them into TV shows.
Absolutely. I mean, it's literally set in modern-day Los Angeles if it happened to be a fantasy world.
That sounds fucking great.
Yeah, I hope it is, man. I haven't seen much of it, but it felt great to do.
All right, man. Well, thank you very much for talking with me. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, man. Thank you for calling me up and talking about this fucking crazy thing.